This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening. You're with Lynn and Ayman, and this hour we're sort of going to be continuing and summing up today's coverage of the novel coronavirus outbreak that has been covered throughout the day by our colleagues here on the station. So essentially, we spoke about this late last week,
yes.
But that was before the first confirmed cases of the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus, were reported here in the country. So there have been updates since. There have been a lot of information spread by the Ministry of Health. There has, however, also been a lot of information spread by don't know who is the best way to describe it. So first up, we're going to be looking at how to share information responsibly. This is coming after several parties, including the Ministry of Health, as well as various professionals, have basically called for Malaysians to remain calm and not spread false information regarding the virus.
Yeah, so just a bit of an update, right, in case you missed it. The Morning Run team spoke with Dr. Suresh Kumar Chidambaram, who is the consultant infectious disease physician at Sungai Buloh Hospital, and they wanted to get some information about how the hospital is dealing with the outbreak.
The patients become extremely infectious when at the peak of their disease. So when they have very severe shortness of breath, or whether we put them on a ventilator, that's when there is maximum infectiousness. Early in the disease, infection is low. This is what we know from SARS, from MERS coronavirus and all that. So sometimes we do transport the patients early in the disease, because we don't know how they're going to evolve. Now we know those three patients are still stable, but we didn't know at that time that they'd be stable, they'd rapidly deteriorate. So Sungai Buloh is a national referral center. We've got a ready-made team always been there ready for this, and we have practiced many times because we have practiced for MERS coronavirus, because every time there is somebody in KLIA for with suspect MERS coronavirus, we take them over. So we've got a ready team here. And so that's the reason why the initial step was to take them over here while they are still very stable.
Dr. Suresh also gave some advice on how to avoid contracting the virus.
Currently, it's mainly travelers who are coming back from China. They need to be responsible. They need to wear a mask and stay indoors as much as possible. The mask is, you know, if you cough, you're containing the virus within the mask, right? Then the next possibility is you might contaminate your hand in the process where you're coughing and all that stuff. When you contaminate your hand, then you touch other surfaces, and of course, you can spread again. So hand washing frequently or hand rub. These are two things that we need to do. And for us general public, if necessary, you can wear a mask. A lot of hand washing needs to be done, because if your hands are contaminated and then if you touch your eyes or something, you can get infected. Those are the two things. Whatever we advise for influenza works for this too.
That was Dr. Suresh Kumar Chidambaram, the consultant infectious disease physician at Sungai Buloh Hospital. You can find the full conversation by searching on our app or website.
So earlier today, the Daily Digest team also spoke with Dr. Kaur Swee King, who is a public policy specialist, to look at whether border controls, travel bans and other containment measures involving the movement of people actually have an impact when it comes to reducing the spread of the virus. Here's a snippet of that conversation.
There is no magic solution to an outbreak. A travel restriction can slow down any spread, but in practical terms, it will not contain any spread in any meaningful way. The World Health Organization is generally not supportive of travel restrictions. It is generally not proven to work according to epidemiological science. And thirdly, very few countries have ever instituted such a travel restriction. Those are the principles of it. Coming to the coronavirus in China, the outbreak is now outside the borders of China. Citizens of other countries are already involved. So a travel restriction on one country only appears to be, well, a bit ineffective, and it could create a false sense of security in Malaysia, because we think that we've controlled it and then we would stop focusing on the coronavirus in ways that are meaningful and calm. There's simply no magic solution to an outbreak. We all must play our part, and certainly we cannot reach for easy solutions thinking that it will save us all.
Dr. Kaur also discussed the calls from some groups here to send Chinese nationals back to China.
These are perfectly understandable fears of human beings wanting to secure our own borders and to protect our own home from, in this case, a foreign threat. The foreign threat in this case is actually not from another country, but actually from another species. And frankly, viruses have no passport. They don't operate in a way that allows you to recognize which citizens of which countries that they are. And it's not as easy or as simple or as effective as merely deporting a group of people simply because they come from a certain country. Mm. So it is not effective at all if we just blanket deport a group of people just because they come from a certain country. Indeed, one can even say that from a human rights perspective, this is discriminatory. From a legal perspective, it is not legal. And morally, it is perhaps not moral as well. Mm-hmm. So we leave aside the human rights, the legal and the moral considerations, and to look specifically at the public health and scientific implications of deportation, then the answer is it does not work.
That was Dr. Kor Swee Kang, who is a public policy specialist, talking about whether travel bans are an effective measure to stop the spread of the coronavirus. So naturally, people are anxious that the virus will further spread if we don't act quickly enough. And you can see that tensions are high, and this is reflected perhaps through criticisms about how the authorities are handling this whole situation.
Yeah, I think if you look through the news portals today and newspapers and just sort of as we do, right, in the course of trying to prepare for our show, you'll see that the news is completely dominated by reports about the coronavirus situation.
Yes.
Here in the country as well as in our neighbours. And there are a lot of concerns. It's also reflected, I think, I suspect, in if other people's families are anything like mine, then over the weekend that we've just had, I think it's also dominated conversations. And in that time, you can hear how quickly... you can hear some people coming forth with the advice that we just heard, which is just wash your hands, you know, wear a mask if you're going to be in a crowded space. In fact, avoid crowded spaces. Make sure that you're constantly washing your hands with soap and water, sanitize your hands. And we're hearing that. But I also saw my fair share of, oh, the Chinese government is clearly underreporting this crisis. There, I think there was a video of a supposed nurse who was, you know, spilling the beans on what was happening within the country and supposedly talking about the incredibly high number of cases that were being underreported. And so I think that there are sort of multiple sources of videos that have been repurposed, kind of sent out, and it is coming at a time where people are looking for any sort of information to believe in, which always happens in outbreaks because it, especially when it's a new disease or a new virus, there is always this fear of we don't know enough. We need to know everything we can possibly know.
Yeah, and it's this lack of clarity of or not knowing exactly about this virus that I guess makes it easier for these fake news to spread. So people want to share any information that they can find. Maybe there's this perception that, you know, we need to gather as much information as you can so we can act accordingly on based on what we feel is right. So while people have good intentions about spreading links on WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever, there is still that lack of, you know, that behavior of like fact-checking before spreading whatever news articles you find. And that just helps with the spread of misinformation.
Yeah, and the rules of what happens with misinformation when it comes to health, I think, very much mimic what happens with any other sort of fake news, which is that the more sensational it is, the easier it is to believe, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking here of, for example, news that a prisoner died after eating mandarin oranges infected with the virus, that there were, you know, there was a plane full of Chinese nationals in Langkawi who are supposedly escaping the virus. And it kind of feeds into, in many ways, this, I think, a mixture of preconceived notions. And also it appeals to the sensationalist in all of us, this idea that, obviously, this makes a lot of sense.
And like fear as always resonates better than facts, right? So it's like if something scares you, you feel more compelled to share that information just because you want to save the ones that you love. You don't want them to be infected as well. And it's a natural human kind of emotion or human kind of behavior. But ultimately, when it comes to these really dangerous outbreaks that can sort of instill a lot of anxiety or nervousness among the people, it is important to have a more reasonable approach or mindset when it comes to, you know, making sure that people get the right kind of information rather than information in general.
So we're talking about we're basically talking about the coronavirus, right? And how information surrounding it is being spread at this point in time. So I'm really curious to know, actually, what have the conversations you've been having? You know, what are they like? Have they been filled with lots of WhatsApp links? Have they been filled with lots of things like that? Or, you know, what are the kinds of fears and anxieties that people have been talking about? Because I know in my family, among my friends, it's certainly been a topic of conversation.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, call us and let us know at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio to address this spread of misinformation around the outbreak. We have on the line with us Dr. Ahmad Firdaus Muhammad Harris, President of Medical Mythbusters Malaysia. Dr. Ahmad, thank you so much for joining us. So we come across a lot of medical misinformation on a regular basis on social media, but like I said, it feels particularly rife at this time. Is panic really what's to blame for this?
Yeah, it partially can be blamed by panic, lah. But then if you see closely for the past few months, since November to December, we've been dealing in from this influenza issue, influenza A. There was all these viral stories about people dying in Malaysia, causing widespread vaccine. We ran out of vaccines, we ran out of antivirals. So from then on, without us having the time to recuperate from all this information from influenza A, then came this novel coronavirus outbreak. So it's just a trending phase whereby it's from bad to worse. So from a normal influenza A whereby you can get treatment and get vaccine, now comes another story of an infection, which is the NCOV, whereby there's no possible, we don't have any treatment yet. So people went berserk with it.
So there seems to be a sense of mistrust towards official sources of information, not just in Malaysia, but also in other countries as well, in terms of the coronavirus. So commentators have attributed this to how China had dealt with the early spread of SARS with a lot of secrecy. So is this where you see the distrust coming from?
Yeah, but distrust is actually a strong word. I mean, it's more attributable to misinformation. SARS was, it happened quite a while back during a time when social media wasn't used as much as it is now. So information wasn't able to be spread as fast as it could. As compared to now, social media is like another limb for most individuals. So it's very important for everyone. But if you see actually how it is now, the Malaysian authorities, especially the Ministry of Health, they've done really well in utilizing all these social media platforms to spread all this information. So the perception of trust is actually quite difficult to manage in any situation. If it was that easy, then we wouldn't have any form of anti-vaccine movement. So these kind of people whereby they have this deep mistrust towards authorities, it's really hard to provide them with any fact. For example, with our experience with anti-vaccine movement, every factual information given will be rebutted with something else. So it will go around the bush and there's no way of actually managing it properly.
It feels like at some points there's also a sense of better safe than sorry, especially when you think about news like the virus-infused mandarin oranges. How would you address that?
Okay, this is a typical story of how misinformation can flourish. So it's like, okay lah, I want to help only. There's no harm in avoiding. I'm trying to do my best to help others. But these things are the ones that will have a life of its own. It will spread. I mean, it can lead to boycotts and progress further. So for this thing to address, you have to make sure that the public have and know where to get their information from. So we have to train, or we have to provide them with proper channels for them to get the information, and also to ask questions so that they don't ask the questions to the wrong people, so that they won't get something that is misinformed.
Okay, so if we could address one specific piece of information that's been going around, there's conflicting advice about how to wear a face mask the correct way in terms of where the coloured part should face, depending on whether or not you're ill. So could you help us clear up this confusion?
Okay, so there's a lot of masks out there. There's the N95 mask and also the surgical mask mainly. So what people are, confusing about is regarding the use of the surgical mask, because for the untrained individual, it would look like it's almost the same, except there's a green or blue portion, or the colored portion, and the white portion, which is one. The colored portion is the one that is, we call it as hydrophobic, whereby it doesn't absorb fluids, and the other part absorbs fluid a bit. So what you need to do is to make sure that the colored part or the hydrophobic part is facing outside. Why? Because we don't want fluids, any forms of fluids or droplets, to come in contact with our oral mucosa. So that will be the main, it's the main function of the face mask. Another one is to make sure that when you wear the face mask, you have to cover both your nose and also your mouth, so that nothing comes in. I mean, regardless whether you're ill or not, you use it the same way. Because even if you cough, it shouldn't be spread to other people as well, because the hydrophobic part is still on the outside.
So how would you advise the public to deal with any new information or links or articles that they read or hear that is about the coronavirus?
Okay. One is you can check the source of the information. If it's like some dodgy name with it's not .my, it's not .com.my or something, then you should stay away from it. Try and avoid blogs whereby they provide opinion pieces. So the source, make sure it's the right source. In this situation, the best source of information will be from WHO, from the Ministry of Health, via their Facebook page or their website. The official page of the Ketua Pengarah Kesihatan or Director General, Dr. Noh Hisham, and also the Minister of Health, Dr. Zulkifli's Twitter and also Facebook page. So for now, that is the main source of information that we have in dealing with the coronavirus issue.
So one last question before you go, Dr. Ahmad. Why is it crucial to fight misinformation, especially in the current context of the coronavirus?
One is the panic. When people panic, they lose a lot of... They tend to do a lot of weird things. I mean, if you see even on social media, there's this sentiment of this hatred towards Chinese tourists, which is, it's not proper to actually... We're not against an individual. We're dealing with a disease. So it's not about race or religion or anything. So once people are too panicked, they tend to stereotype everyone. So every Chinese person will be a Chinese person from Wuhan province. So that's not right. And then when there is panic, people tend to, every single thing would be attributed to coronavirus. Like recently, there was a video online about a person collapsing in a store or something. The person most likely had a cardiac arrest or heart attack, and people are viraling it as a coronavirus, a coronavirus infection. So when this happens, people would not go to shop. People would be hoarding all of the products, all the food and everything at home. So it's an unhealthy situation.
Dr. Ahmad, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Ahmad Firdaus Muhammad Haris, President of Medical Mythbusters Malaysia, talking about the importance really of getting our facts straight in this season of misinformation, especially when it comes to health. So we've been wondering, what have your conversations about the coronavirus been like? Because if it's anything like what I've been hearing over the weekend, then it's a mixture of lots of fear, some facts, and a lot of speculation. So I think that that is the exact kind of hodgepodge mix that makes it ripe for people to start sending links, sending videos, and having people believe them.
Yeah, it's the environment of fear, right? Like, we don't know what's going on. We need more information. But at the same time, the right kind of information aren't the ones that are being spread. Instead, it's these blogs or links that have like dodgy URLs that are being spread. So you don't know the veracity of these information that's being spread.
So we do have messages. Junkit says, for example, not happy that resellers are exploiting the chance to sell face masks and sanitizers at a much higher price. Five pieces of a face mask was 4.5 ringgit last week. This week it's 5 ringgit.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, it doesn't seem very nice, right?
Yeah, but that's just how it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's like, how the market works. When you have more demand, and they raise the price. But, yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, I think we saw the same thing happening during the haze, because that's when everybody just gets really worried and everybody is looking for exactly the same thing. And then we also have this from Sevest.
For my family, strangely, it's not the coronavirus, but it's about the carcinogenic aspect of an air fryer. It's an experiment of... referring to an article, right? So the article talks about an experiment of 10 sample size, 10 air fryers using already deep fried French fries. Is it any wonder that the outcome will be carcinogenic? Not to me. I obviously did not agree with what one of my family members said. The general public can exercise good judgment.
So yeah, the thing is, right, I think there was a recent study that also showed how quickly people believe things based on headlines, or how few people actually read the articles aside from reading the headlines. So I think in an example like what Sylvester's putting out, the headline is everything. People are just going to read like air fryers, carcinogenic, and then that's that. You know, that's the end of it all. So we're talking today about trying to prevent misinformation and also just giving updates on what's going on with the novel coronavirus situation here in the country. Up next, we're going to be talking about how some of the conversations, I think, have been spiraling out into discriminatory places, into bad places. That's coming your way after the news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.